You're listening to the Girl Banker Podcast. I'm your host, Natalie Bartholomew. Just like customer service, your marketing must be thorough and personal. The Twigs Group can help you develop and execute a strong marketing plan that will elevate your business brand, showcasing what makes your bank so special. Visit welovecommunitybanks.com to see how they can help you with your bank marketing. Hey, all you Girl Bankers out there. Be sure to join the Girl Banker Facebook group where you, along with over 3,000 other women in banking across the country, are sharing ideas, asking questions about best practices, and offering daily motivation to one another. This community has been so helpful to me in my banking career, and I have no doubt that you will find tremendous value in it as well. All you have to do is search for the Girl Banker group in Facebook, answer the questions, and verify that you are, in fact, a woman in banking, and join in on the fun. I'll see you there. Hey, Girl Banker podcast listeners. I'm here to tell you about the new Life is Grand podcast brought to you by Grand Savings Bank. I might be a little biased, but I'm sure excited to tell you guys about this new podcast where a revolving cast of Grand Savings Bank team members uncover the things that make our community so special. Join me and our vice chairman, Tyler Steele, as we host the Life is Grand podcast, now available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Grand Savings Bank is a member FDIC Equal Housing Lender. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Totally kidding. I don't know if you guys listen to Armchair Expert. Dax Shepard starts every episode doing that. I've always wanted to do it. Thanks for indulging me. This is Natalie Bartholomew. You're listening to the Girl Banker podcast, and I have a treat for you guys today. I have the owner of Presley Page, which is the cutest little store you ever did see in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Owner Maggie Owens, and she's going to be talking to us just about starting her store in January of 2020. Of all years to get things up and going, she started last January a year ago and was met with a pandemic. She did her own thing, found new ways to be creative, and still grew her business. And she's got some really good nuggets of information for bankers at the end of the podcast. So be sure you hang on, listen to her story. It's fantastic. I think that you guys are going to love this perspective from a small business owner that survived the beginning of the pandemic and has made the best of it. So here we go with Maggie Owens. Guys, today I have Maggie Owens with me. She's the owner of Presley Page in Fayetteville, the cutest little shop you ever did see. She has the most gorgeous Instagram content. If you love pink, you're in for a treat. You've got to go follow her there. She also has her personal Instagram account. So Maggie, do you want to tell us what that is so people can follow you there also?
Yeah, it's MP_Owens.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, welcome, Maggie. It's so great to have you on the Girl Banker podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Natalie. It was so fun to see your requests come through. I never met you until after the pandemic had like eased up some. And so yeah. I remember the first day you came into the store, I was like, oh my gosh, it's the Girl Banker.
That was the day that Witten, my youngest, and I, we had a date that day, as he called it, and we went to the farmer's market. And I'd always wanted to go inside your store after following you and seeing you get up and going. And so we went, and I remember being so embarrassed because a little turd while we were there.
Not at all. No, it was super fun. And I think that's been one of the really exciting parts of this journey is I'm not from Fayetteville. I don't know a lot of people in the area. And through opening the business, I've really had an opportunity to connect with so many people online and then in person when they do come into the store. And so you were a great example of somebody that I felt like I knew but didn't really know. It was always like, it's always so fun to see people in real life. In-person connections.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of a good segue. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what path you took that led you to Fayetteville?
Yeah, I'm on round two in Fayetteville at the moment. I'm originally from Hot Springs, a town here in Arkansas, for those of you that are not from the state. And it's about 4 hours roughly from Fayetteville. I had never really spent much time up here. And I went to college in Utah. I did some time in Salt Lake City and then Orem. So I had a split undergrad degree between two universities. And I thought I was going to go to law school, and that was just the plan since like probably age 7. I used to always tell people I'm going to be a lawyer, an attorney, and own a business. I clearly didn't know the difference between two of those things. And I always thought that that was the path for me. And then right before I was finishing my undergrad degree, I decided not to pursue law and ended up applying for jobs and got a job in Arkansas. None of my family was living in the state at the time. So it was kind of crazy. You go all the way across the world, or across the United States, I guess, and just to come back.
Yeah.
So that was how I ended up here working for a real estate development firm, Specialized Real Estate Group. They are a wonderful firm that does a lot of great urban development in our area, primarily apartments. So mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of joining their team and leading a lease up on one of their projects straight out of college, and left and then came back again. After I did that project, I left to go work for some other developers and then came back in 2017. And I've been here, I guess, ever since, right? A little over 3 years.
Yeah. It was just in your cards to land back in the great state of Arkansas.
I loved it. Yeah. I just really loved my time in Fayetteville. So it brought me.
It is a pretty cool town.
Biased, but yes.
So tell us about what the thought process was to start Presley Page. And first, tell our listeners what Presley Page is.
Yeah, so Presley Page is a paper partying gift store. We have tons of paper products, meaning everything from cards that you might want to send your friend on their birthday to box sets of thank you cards, notepads, journals, lots of fun things, easy gifts to come in, and then a wide range of party products. So everything from cups and plates and fun napkins to balloons. So a little bit of all the things that I love the most in this world, and lots of pink and color all in one spot. In opening Presley Page, I always loved traveling because I got to go to new places and see things that we didn't have where I was currently living. So I've always kind of lived in small college towns outside of my time in Utah. And I always wanted that in Northwest Arkansas. Originally, I was actually planning to open the shop in Springfield, Missouri. That's where I was living prior to Fayetteville. And it didn't happen, but we found ourselves here in Fayetteville. And I think the biggest thing was I wanted a place that really sparked joy and happiness that I didn't find anywhere else. And that's kind of what I've created, I think, for a lot of people. I know for myself.
Oh my gosh, yes. I think everything about the store, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the podcast, but I mean, I love to share the stuff that you have there. And I have two boys, and I feel like they even benefit from the cute things that I have found in your store. I mean, it does spark joy. And gosh, don't we need more of that these days?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that. In a time where things seems really crazy in our world, I opened this business, but it was all about happy things, right? Like,
oh yeah,
with smiley faces on them or glittery cards and stickers. So it's been a lot of fun so far, and we're just getting started.
And I love, one of my favorite things about your store are the cards. Like, they crack me up. I don't know what vendor you use to get them, but they are fantastic. Keep up the good work. I need to come in and stock up. And of course, you have an online presence too, where people can buy online. I really highly recommend everybody right now to go and order as many of these cards as you can and just have them on hand. And I did that one day when I came in. I just got a bunch of random cards that made me laugh, that I thought, I need this, because you never know when you're going to need to send an encouraging word or just make someone laugh. And they have been so great to have on hand. I've used them and they went over really well, and my friends and family loved getting them. So I need to go stock back up for the new year. I know you've got some cute Valentine stuff in there, which is another fun, like your shop and Valentine's go really well together.
I always tell people that I didn't know that I loved the color pink until about, I don't know, 6 months ago. I just like, man, I think I like pink.
Yeah.
I always thought green was my favorite color, but now I'm like totally in on the pink.
Yeah, it's super fun. You had a pink Christmas tree I saw this year too. Yeah. I mean, you just really bought in. It's so fun. And something else that sparks joy, I think, than what you do on your Instagram. I love your dance parties.
Oh no. I was like, I know she's not gonna
I think it's fantastic. Yeah, and you know, when you have an Instagram presence, I know with you having a store and retail presence, like you've got to be constantly putting out that content all the time. But I love that you show that side of you, because to me, adding that personal level to your business, you know, really connects you to the store. And I know that's what kept me following along, because I was really jealous of your dance moves.
Well, they're not great. So for everyone listening, please do not go watch them.
I think they're fantastic. Let's talk about the fact that you opened up this store last January, 2020, high hopes. All of us are talking about all of our goals that we have for 2020. And I mean, we're all going to just take the world over, you know, really, really just energize for this new decade. And then March rolls around and ruins it all. And here you are having to kind of shut your storefront down, totally pivot. Talk to our listeners about that whole process, like the ups, the downs. It had to have been a roller coaster of emotions.
I mean, just thinking about it gives me like
PTSD. Maybe I shouldn't bring it up.
How did that happen? So backing up a little bit, I had started saving and really trying to open the business in 2016. That was when it really hit me that, you know, I want to do this. There's another local business that was closing a location that they had out of state. And so I had an opportunity to purchase tables and a speaker system and cash drawers and like all these little things that this business was deciding to close. And I was like, I want all these things. And I lived in Missouri at the time. My mom had retired to Fayetteville. And so I worked with this business owner to buy all these things that were in her storage unit and to put them in my mom's garage. And at the meantime, I was trying to get funding for Presley Page. And every bank, no offense.
Hey, that's why we're chatting today. I think people need to hear this stuff.
They were telling me, like, this is not a recession-proof business. You're really smart, girl. I have so many emails that say, you're very smart, but this is a good idea. So that was what was so hard, that I was hearing from all these people that this was a terrible, it was fun, but wasn't going to make money and not recession proof. And so I am very nervous already as an individual when it comes to spending money. And I had worked full time for a very long time, and using all those savings was scary. And so I went into it. I finally took a leap of faith after all these years, and I completely bootstrapped the business. But when the pandemic hit, I thought to myself, oh my gosh, people told me this was not going to work.
Oh,
I was like, what am I going to do? I'm not in a business that's recession proof. I'm like, I don't know that most things are, but it's hard to put collateral, you know, behind $3 or $4 cards. So I totally understand where that they're coming from. And I went into it so excited and then so scared. And so we closed, like you said, we closed the storefront in March. We closed it, I think it was March 17th. It was St. Patrick's Day. And then we didn't reopen until May 19th.
Mm.
And so as a new business, you already kind of don't know what you're doing. And then your business closes. And we didn't have an online store at the time. And so coming from a role of marketing and just wanting to figure it out and not lose it after what I just, you know, felt.
Right.
I just thought to myself, well, I don't know what to do other than to use Instagram. And so I pivoted a lot of our business to Instagram DMs. We were posting, I mean, you were one of our early customers. So, you know, like we were posting, we would take pictures of product because the store was closed. It was a disaster. So all day long, I was taking pictures of product and sending them to people. Do you like this candle? Oh, you don't like that one. Okay, what about these five cards? Which of these five cards do you like? And that was what I did all day long. My mom because I was working, what my mom would do is she would call me and I would be like, okay, this is pull these five cards and set them down for me and take a picture. And my sister too, she was a dental hygienist, or she is a dental hygienist, but she was out of work because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So they had our shop phone and were responding to texts and calls all day long. And I was like, they would just send me photos and be like, oh, no, that one doesn't work. You need to substitute it for this. And so it was a lot of really late nights and a big shift. You know, we were heavily party when we first opened the store. And one thing that I realized really quickly was the party products weren't selling near as well as the other kind of products in our store. So our candles, birthday candles, or just general candles would always sell out before a plate would sell out.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. So that was one of those early shifts of like listening to our customers, seeing what they're purchasing and trying to buy more of that thing, even though like inventory is tight, cash is tight. How do we kind of pivot right. in the moment? And we were trying things that didn't work. We would try again. So, I mean, I don't know if I answered the question exactly, but it was just so much of a start, stop, go. What I know it seems like, you know, March to May isn't that long, but it seemed like forever. And there's been a lot of the residual of that that's kind of like flowed over even when our store was open.
Sure. Do you feel that that 2 to 3 month period, which felt at the time still does like 10 years. Yeah, I mean, I remember at the bank, just that initial 2 to 3 months, just the roller coaster of emotions and ups and downs. And like you said, late nights of things going on. But do you feel that time kind of, did it change your perception on what the store was going to be because of how you had to pivot?
Yes.
Like, and the focus of the store.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I always knew that we wanted to go more into home and like gift products, but I didn't really understand the demand or the return. And mm-hmm. so that was a really big shift in how quickly, coming from the real estate world and understanding like the different impacts that we have had in our business over several years of working in that industry, it was kind of like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
And so I'm really grateful that I was able to work full time and make business decisions or take business risks based mm-hmm. off what I was seeing. And yeah. so because you followed along, you know that in September, we made the decision to knock down a wall, bring 3 more tables in. And that was really like a, oh my gosh, I hope this works. This is what I'm seeing. And I think a lot of that has to do with what I saw during this 2 months that we were closed. And I had I had like a note in my phone that has turned into an Excel spreadsheet. If somebody asked for something that we didn't have, mm-hmm. I would write it down. And so I would put little tally marks next to it. Like, okay, another person asked for this. So that was what would determine what I would buy next, because I knew that I couldn't just afford to take tons of risks on things that I didn't know that my customers would want.
Right.
So I really tried to buy things that I thought would sell well. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Lots of trial and error. And I think that COVID really taught me to trust myself more and to trust my vision. And to the more that I'm excited about what I'm doing, I can bring people on board with me
mm-hmm.
versus trying to copycat or mimic what anybody else was doing in the market.
Yeah, that right there, I think to anyone listening, I don't care if you're in banking or what. I mean, what you said right there, being authentic and being who you are and telling that story is so important. And I think people can see through that. And that's probably why you've had the success you've had and have that followership. I mean, where's your Instagram now? Like you're over 10. You're probably higher than that.
No, we're 10, I think 10-4. So
oh, yeah. Yeah. I just think that being authentic and showing what you're passionate about, like you said, instead of being a copycat, I mean, that's easy to do. And I see that a lot in bank marketing. You see one bank do one thing, then everyone tries to do that same thing because banking's not sexy. I say this all the time. It's really hard.
The same thing about apartments, you know, and I came from the world of marketing apartments and really expensive apartments most of the time. And I'm like, the architecture might be sexy, but at the end of the day, like, who wants to follow an apartment complex? Not people. I'm sure it's probably the same thing. It's like, who thinks about following their bank?
Right. Exactly. I mean, I wish I could fill our Instagram account with beautiful pink things like you get to with Presley Page. So that's why it's fun having the Girl Banker content, so I can kind of change it up a little bit. But yeah, being authentic, I think, is everything. And I think it's really, really done well for you. But what would you say, let's say, what has been your biggest challenge so far as a small business owner, pandemic aside? So remove that from the equation, which may be kind of hard to do. What was your biggest challenge?
Oh my gosh. I'm like taking a step back here. I'm like staring into the sky, right? which is actually just the ceiling of my closet. I think the biggest challenge for me personally has been remembering my why throughout all of this. And I talk to a lot of the young girls that I have the opportunity to mentor. I always tell them, like, you have to know your why. And I always would hear that from other people. I'm a huge Simon Sinek fan, starting, you know, from back when the book and video first came out. And I never understood that until I had a business. And so the biggest challenge for me has been when everything else is going on and there's chaos all around me, remembering my why and letting that ground me and help me make future decisions. Because it's so easy to be distracted by all the other opportunities or easy ways of doing things. Yeah. But knowing and saying, like, nope, I want to do it this way. It might be the hard way, but this is why. Like, this is important to me that I execute it this way because of my why. And that has gotten me into situations where I didn't say no when I should have said no. And learning and growing from that has been a big part of my reflection for year one. We said no very little in our year. And it was because I was so afraid to lose an opportunity.
Right.
Even if something didn't seem exactly right for me, I still said yes because I didn't want to miss out. And so looking back, remembering my why and trying to stay grounded in avoiding distractions is a big takeaway into, you know, what I think people will see happening in 2021 with the brand.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, that saying no, even though it doesn't feel right, that's something that has been kind of, I have a good friend that has a whole platform called Reject the Hustle. And it's about that type of mentality of kind of rejecting this hustle culture that everyone's tried to adopt, thinking that that's what, especially as women, that we have to have that to be successful. Oh, yeah. Instead of following what we know to be what gives us what we're passionate about and what we're excited about, and then learning to say no when it's appropriate. Because sometimes we do that at our own, we don't say no, we say yes at our own expense.
Yeah. And I think the last year working full-time and having the shop, I'm used in working in a corporate culture or on a small team, which I'm assuming a lot of these listeners are in a small team at their bank or at their job. And so, you know, when you're on a small team or in a situation where you want to impress somebody above you, you always say yes. And so, or oftentimes, right?
Right. And so, right. We do.
I found myself, the more I said yes, the more I didn't do. And so it negatively impacted me and how I was executing because I said yes so often. I wasn't able, I didn't have the bandwidth.
Right.
And so it, say no, learning to say no and knowing why I'm doing something, big part of 2021 and the energy that we're pushing towards it.
Oh, for sure. I think I've really become, I used to be a super social person. I still am. But I've enjoyed not having some type of obligation every night. You know, somewhere to go or something that I have to do every weekend. Like, I've really enjoyed becoming somewhat reclusive. But it's nice to know, like, okay, now I have a much better grasp on what to say yes to and what to say no to, because we've all kind of been forced to say no this last year.
Yeah, probably more no's than we've ever had.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
So how would you say that you are, or would you say that as a business owner and the lessons that you learned this last year or the challenges that you were kind of forced to face and endure, do you feel that you're better off as a business owner after this first year dealing with a pandemic? Or, I mean, obviously we all wish that we didn't have to deal with this pandemic, but do you feel it came at, you know, you opened your store this year or in 2020 for a reason, you know, the stars aligned for this all to happen for a reason. Do you feel you're better off from it?
I would say, yeah, because a lot of people, I was so optimistic and so happy because I had opened a business and I didn't know how good it could be. Right.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. So I think that like blind optimism was great for 2020, because while other businesses were feeling the pain of what they had anticipated or what they had known to be true for former years, I didn't know.
You didn't know any better.
I didn't know any better. I was like, I remember, this is going to sound so crazy, like, when we first opened, I knew that I needed to make, I think it was $83 a day in order to keep all the bills paid and still have money to buy new inventory. Not a lot, but it was so crazy how quickly that changed throughout the year, and how now when we have like a slow day or a bad day, I have to remind myself I only needed $83.
Yeah.
I only needed 83 or 87, you know, however much it was. It was like, I actually only needed that much to stay afloat, at, you know, when I first started. So I think that going into future years with the business, it helps. I mean, I appreciate so much more the struggles of small businesses and the constant pivoting that you have to do. I think there's already so much that happens based off seasonality in the retail world. But putting the pandemic on top of that, I think, I mean, you can see it here in Northwest Arkansas and just in general, people pivoted to selling masks, selling more at-home beauty products and more self-care items when they traditionally might not have. And
right. So
I think it was a good lesson to me of listen to your customer and follow that like instinct versus... Sometimes, I guess this is the opposite of my earlier thing, but it's like, sometimes you just need to listen, and to do something, even for a moment, is going to help you get by versus trying to like hop on a bandwagon trend that might not seem right at the same time, if that makes any sense at all.
No, that makes perfect. It makes perfect sense. And I love the type of stuff that you have in the store, just the feminist vibe that your store has.
I like that.
I'm obsessed with it. Not too long ago, I stopped in and your mom, which you refer to as Shop Mom. Does she have her own Instagram account too?
Yeah, she does. It's Presley Page Shop Mom. The first day that the business opened. So for those of you that don't know, I was working full time. And so my mom works in the shop Monday through Friday and during the day. And I work in that shop on Saturday and Sunday. And so after day one, I said, oh, okay, Shop Mom, to my mom jokingly in a text. And that was like in the morning. And then that evening, she had sent me like 3 Instagram videos. And she's like, I think I want to have an Instagram.
I love it.
So it was like totally all her shop.
Yeah. And it's just part of the brand. Like, she's part of the brand. Yeah. And I love it. She's been there both times I've been. And so the last time I went in, she couldn't wait to show me some new mugs that had some bad words on
them. Oh my God.
Maybe not everyone does. I appreieated it because it really, it was my sentiments like here lately. And she was like, you've got to see, aren't these the cutest things you've ever seen? I was like, I'm obsessed with your mom. Shop
That's
mom.
So funny. Shop mom.
Yeah. Yeah. But love the stuff you have in the store. So to kind of wrap up this podcast, because I know you've got things to do, like run a small business. I want our girl bankers that are following along to take away some nuggets of knowledge from you as a small business owner. So what are some things through this crazy year from getting started up and just continuing to navigate through owning a small business, What should bankers know? What are some things that would have been helpful to you, whether it's personality or resources? What can bankers do to be better for small businesses?
Well, just putting me on the spot, Natalie.
Yeah, that's a loaded question. That's a loaded question.
Wait, you're coming with all the heavy hitters today.
Yeah.
I think that one thing is that lending to anybody is a risk. And so if you have a good feeling about somebody and they come to you with a solid business plan, and if you can fund them, great. If you can't, provide some feedback. It would have been really helpful for me to have somebody that provided feedback and even followed up, because I know that the people that I had approached, the feedback that they gave me, which you'll laugh about this, they told me to go to the farmer's market. They're like, this is probably more of a thing for a farmer's market.
And what?
I don't really think that you understand what I'm doing. So really listen to the client and understand their business and ask questions if you don't understand it. I know not every idea is going to be wonderful or fundable. Get to know the work ethic of the individual that is completing the paperwork and what their plans are. I mean, I had my branding done for Presley Page in 2016. The first thing I did was hire a graphic designer. I had already picked out paint colors. Like, everything was done, and I had been sitting on it since 2016. I had the budget, the pitch, like the deck, all the interiors. I mean, it was just done. And so I think if people are willing to invest a lot of time and energy into something and you see potential in them, be their biggest advocate when going to, I think it's a board, right? Like, you go to a lending board or something.
Right, a committee. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes a board.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes to discuss it. And it's like, be their advocate. And if you can't be their advocate, maybe find somebody passions with this person's interests too, and what that business is, because maybe they can help them in a different way that you can't. And I mean, to me, the biggest things that stick out, I know I've already said this, but following up with that person to see if they've made any forward progress. I know that ideally they would follow back up with you, right, when they had made progress, but sometimes they feel like that door is already shut. And so if there's somebody that you thought, man, this was a really good idea, we couldn't do it right now, when the opportunity does arise, maybe follow back up with them. Or maybe say, if you do see them open their business and with or without funding, congratulate them and talk to them about the resources that could be available now.
Right.
Because I know that that's something. When I opened the business, I had this day really early on in January where we had done $2,000 before noon. And I was at work and my mom was at the shop alone. She was freaking out. And so I went and I talked to a bank that I had previously talked to. I went and I scheduled an immediate meeting. I was like, hey, I know you didn't want to loan me money 2 years ago, but like, I just started my business less than 2 days ago. And this is a success that I'm seeing, and I really need help because I don't know, you know, I wanted a line of credit because I just had a credit card, an Amex card, and it was completely paid off, right? I wasn't carrying debt or anything on the business. And I was like, but I really need your help because I have more demand than I have cash to keep buying new products. And so I wanted a line of credit. And the answer that they told me was, well, come back in 6 months.
Oh.
And I remember walking out, I said, okay, thank you so much. And I remember walking to my car and crying because I was like, they don't understand. And like, when will they ever? And so I think, you know, part of a lot of banking I notice is relationships, and be a big advocate for the small businesses in your community. I think Natalie obviously is a great example of that, but like, be an advocate and show up for them, not just when they need something for you.
Right.
From you, but like, be their customer and ask them how they're doing, remind them, you know, of your services. And sometimes that can just be, you know, checking and savings account.
Yeah.
It is a line of credit, or maybe, you know, the bank might own some property and they're looking for a new tenant. You know, there's all these different services that banks provide and ways that bankers can can play a role in our community. And so I think it's just being there for them and showing up, not just to get their business, but to support the individual's business.
Yeah, well, to be a partner, really. Yeah. I mean, and that sounds cliche because you see that a lot in bank marketing. You know, we want to be your partner. At our bank, at Grand Savings, we always say people bank with people, and you kind of hit on that relationship thing. But you gotta, if you're going to talk the talk, you have to walk the walk. And like you said, just building that relationship and understanding each other. I mean, you needed something fixed then, not 6 months from then.
I mean, this is going to sound so terrible. And so I'm like, maybe I should actually schedule a meeting with that. Like, I mean, I literally used an online bank because I was so mad, you know?
And to a community banker's ears, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that are cringing right now. I mean, that's our worst nightmare, but a local community bank created that for you, like created that situation and forced you to go that direction. Yeah. And that's everything that we're not.
I mean, I met with 5 banks in Northwest Arkansas, yeah. And I had met with banks in Springfield and through connections had introduced me to people. And so it was like time and time again, when people are getting burned, you know, and
yeah.
it's never, you know, that individual person.
Sure.
But
sure.
I think so much of banking is so relationship based. And
yep.
That's why, you know, when I moved out of state multiple times throughout my professional career, like I kept my checking and savings with the same bank because I was like, no, I'm not changing. Like I know what I'm getting and there's that relationship there. But lending on business has been really a hard thing for me. And I'm really excited for the future, but I probably won't go back to I will never go back to those banks again.
And I think as a young woman too, like, and I hate to bring this into the conversation, but I mean, this is a platform about advocating for women, but did you feel that you were discounted because you were young and female? Do you think that ever played into it?
You know, most of the people that I met with were women. So, that it didn't really seem to be that way. But I think that age was part of it. So I just turned 30 in December. So I'm young and I started trying to get funding right at 25-ish. And so what I wish I would have known then was, even though I was going and asking for, we'll just throw out a dollar amount, like say that I was going and asking for $40,000 and just instead of telling me no, I wish they would have said, hey, what if we did 10? What could you do with $10,000? Put together a business plan with us lending you 10,000 or, you know, 20, whatever, and come back and show me what that would look like. That's what I wish would have happened because it would have helped me to be more realistic maybe about things because ultimately I didn't even need all that I was asking for, but I didn't know that at the time because I had never opened a business.
Right.
Knowing how much access to information and data is available, especially for those that are in the lending community, being able to provide that with somebody and say like, hey, I think that this actually might work for you. Or I see that most restaurants lend with or start with this amount and a ventless hood might work for what you're doing instead of making this capital investment to do X, Y, and Z. I think that those things could be really helpful and open the door for more conversations. So for me, it was never really about, it wasn't about gender, thankfully.
Well, I am glad to hear that. I was going to be aggravated.
No, I never felt that way at all.
Good. Well, I think you just made some really excellent points and hearing your perspective and your story, I think is going to resonate with some listeners. So thank you for sharing your story with us. And I know that you're going to have lots of girl bankers from all over the country following you now because they're going to be looking for the dance parties. Well, Maggie, thank you so much for spending some time to talk today. And I love the store and I've loved getting to know you. I feel like I've known you for a long time. I know that sounds just silly, but it's true. It's just, that's what I love about the Instagram space. You know, there's a lot of
kind of crazy things going on with social media. And I think it's great to focus on the good that's there. And so kudos to you for all that you're doing with your small business and with your online presence and your other job that you have. You've got a lot going for you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I hope to connect with everybody. If you have any questions, reach out to me on Instagram. I'm happy to chat about my journey or answer any other questions that you guys have.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Maggie. Be sure to subscribe to the Girl Banker podcast so that you don't miss an episode. And follow me on Instagram at The Girl Banker. The views and opinions expressed in the Girl Banker podcast are those of the individual participants and do not reflect the official policy or position of any financial institution or agency. It is produced by Natalie Bartholomew and Bobby Hudspeth.